This is the David Duke Internet Radio Broadcast. Representative David Duke served in the House of Representatives in Louisiana from 1989 to 1992. He authored the first bill in the country passed by a legislative body that prohibited the racial discrimination called affirmative action. In two statewide elections, for U.S. Senate and for governor, he received over 60% of the white vote statewide and was denied victory only by the 97% black bloc vote. David Duke publishes the Duke Report and travels the country and the world speaking out for the preservation of our heritage and rights. I present the foremost spokesman for white civil rights in the entire world, David Duke.
In the last years of the 20th century, American whites have been incredibly indifferent to the most critical issue facing the United States of America, that being the rapid transformation of our country from an overwhelmingly white nation to a non-white society. In a democratic form of government, such a change has a potential to literally turn our society upside down, and that process is well underway in the America of the late 1990s. And it's not just going on in America. It's occurring in Canada, in Australia, France, and many other white nations. Massive immigration also transforms America from a spacious and resource-rich nation to a far more crowded and environmentally challenged land. No sizable nation in the history of the world has ever undergone such a sweeping population shift in so short a period. Equally astonishing is the lack of understanding among the American people of what is really happening. The mass media treats this seismic change almost as if it is inconsequential and unimportant. And if it's mentioned at all, it is usually portrayed as a change which will benefit our economy and enrich us culturally. But evidence suggests, though, that this demographic change may well be to America as the struck iceberg was to the Titanic. The two engines of the seminal change are massive non-white immigration and differential birth rates between whites and non-whites. Both immigration rates and birth rates are not the accidental result of some natural process. They are directly the result of government policies that are racially discriminatory against those of European descent. About 1 in 1/3 million aliens legally immigrate into America each year, along with about 700,000 illegal immigrants. Of the 2 million immigrants, over 95% are non-white. In birth rates, blacks have double the birth rate of whites, and Mexicans have 3 times the birth rate of whites. The welfare system itself sustains and encourages non-white illegitimacy, while the tax system penalizes whites who work and show responsibility. As late as 1960, America was about 90% of European origin. The Immigration and Nationality Act amendments of 1965 started a process which will cause whites in America to be less than 75% of the population in the year 2000. And most experts believe that whites will themselves become a minority by 2050. Some projections have that landmark coming even earlier, by a decade or more, as the percentage of racial change becomes more rapid. Unless a radical change takes place in government policy by the time the students of the white high school class of the year 2000 reach retirement age, they and their children will find themselves outnumbered and outvoted in America. The mass media celebrates the change with constant reporting of immigrant success stories. High school valedictorian here, successful entrepreneur there, sometimes with full-page picture spreads of the beaming smiles of the newcomers, and they're almost always large families. But how often does the media correlate immigration with the far more common immigrant reality of crime? Every immigrant valedictorian can be contrasted to hundreds of dope dealers, robbers, murderers, and organized crime members. Each immigrant entrepreneur can be contrasted to hundreds mired in the welfare system, producing a seemingly endless series of babies nursed at the collective breast of productive Americans. The media constantly offers up the successful immigrant as proof that the American dream is alive and well. Yet it never offers up a clear picture of the immigrant version of the American nightmare. Such could be the story of Colin Ferguson, a white-hating, illegal immigrant who obtained residence through marriage and then ultimately gunned down 25 people on New York's Long Island Railroad. Instead of being an argument to reduce immigration, Clinton and other liberals used the incident to call for gun control. The crime problem in America is not related to the number of guns. It's related to the number of racial minorities. The eager white gun buyers of America have exactly the same crime rates as the gun-banned whites of Europe. It is not guns that's causing the crime in this country. It's the proportion of minorities in this country. Also, a disproportionate amount of crimes committed by aliens in America. Fully one-fourth of the prisoners in federal penitentiaries are not American citizens. Proportionately, that's three times higher than it should be by their percentage of population. As staggering as these figures are, one should not forget that this figure does not include aliens who've been naturalized, or the teenage or adult children of aliens born in America who are by birth citizens. Even though one might suppose that most of the aliens are incarcerated for drug importation, the fact is that upwards to four-fifths are in federal prison for drug dealing within the United States of America. Aliens dominate an incredibly disproportionate amount of the drug trafficking in this country. In fact, from importing to distribution, combining the Nigerian heroin connection with the Russian Jewish mafia from Russia, the South American cartels, and the black street dealers, there is a profoundly minority character to one of the most severe problems facing the United States. America's recent experience with Nigerian immigrants offers a grim look into the current immigration policy of the federal government that could only be described as anti-American. U.S. law enforcement officials estimate that 75% of the 100,000 Nigerians in the United States are involved in serious criminal activity, which includes accounting for 40% of all heroin smuggled into the United States. Now, if government officials admit that three out of four Nigerian immigrants are criminals, yet they continue to let them in so they can prey on American citizens, I tell you, it's not only the Nigerians who are criminal, it's also the federal government for betraying the trust of our people. Multiculturalism is the new catechism of our schools, the new definition of what we call America. In the American consciousness, we have gone from a nation of pioneers to a nation of immigrants, to a nation of multiculturalism and multiracialism. The price of such change is onerous for traditional Americans. We pay at rates of crime so high that they challenge the term civilized society. We pay in schools where our children are at best taught at a much lower standard and at worst face physical intimidation and abuse. Payment is made in inordinately high taxes and a sharply declining infrastructure so that the machinery of welfare, food stamps, housing, medical care, and criminal justice and incarceration can grind on. White Americans pay in the racial discrimination of affirmative action, and we pay spiritually from a media that instills in us no sense of pride, but only a sense of guilt for our heritage. Future generations of our people will find it amazing that so few whites during the last decade of the 20th century could face up to the grim reality of the racial change. I can imagine what those who hear these words in the years of the next century would think. Why couldn't they see what would happen to their society when they became outnumbered and outvoted? As the white taxpayer base shrinks while the minorities increase, the non-white newcomers and newborn will demand more and more of the money spawned by white productivity. Crushing taxes will be exacted on the productive few by the unproductive many. Reaching a point of diminishing returns, there will be only so much left that can be extracted from the contracting white population, and the decline of society will be rapid and catastrophic. Americans can glimpse the future in the inner cities of America, the political corruption, failing schools, drug problems, crime, and the rundown housing, and even in the trash in the streets. All those things hold a preview of the 21st century in America. And when all of America is of the same racial proportion as that of the inner cities, there will be no white infrastructure, no white cornucopia of tax revenue mitigating the third worldism. Criminals will no longer be held in check by white police and prosecutors and judges and juries, and the shrinking white tax base will be inadequate to the cost of the criminal justice system and the jails needed to apprehend and house the lawbreakers. The housing, food, medical care, and schooling of those who cannot provide their own will no longer find its funding in the productive white taxpayer. As bad as conditions are in the inner cities at the close of this, the 20th century, how much worse would they be without the generous support of a productive white America, when all of America is made up of the people of the inner city? America transforms to a land somewhere between Mexico and Haiti. The truth is, the transition is more likely to be that of Haiti rather than Mexico. Because of the racial demarcation that so often accompanies the haves and have-nots, a revolutionary proletarian fervor will have a clear target: people of light skin. Fires of racial hatred and envy will be stoked by those who explain black failure in terms of white racism and oppression. And that's going on today. Whether or not the revolution will come about through massive violence like the genocide of the whites in Haiti in the last decade of the 18th century, or whether it will come about by sheer numbers in the voting booths, the coming non-white revolution will leave America a land unrecognizable and abhorrent to its white citizens. Can one imagine a Congress and president made up of such men such as Marion Barry, a crack-smoking whore master who, even after getting caught in the act on videotape, was re-elected by his fellow blacks as mayor of our nation's capital? A fitting omen for 20th century America. Or how about Jesse Jackson, the man who used to flavor white customers' food with his own expectorant? A man who went to Cuba and praised Fidel Castro with chants of Viva la Revolution, and who chants on campuses, hi-ho, hi-ho, Western culture has to go. Or perhaps imagine the white-hating Louis Farrakhan as president, a man whose minions have openly advocated genocide against white men, women, and children. Can you imagine those men in charge of America? If not, you better hold on to your hats, because men like this will someday rule us if we let ourselves become a minority in our own nation. An American Haiti or Mexico is not inevitable, but it is inevitable if white Americans do not gain control over their government, their media, and their borders. Even if whites become demographically outnumbered, for a generation there will be enough whites to prevail because of our intelligence and organizational ability, but only if we are racially awakened and strong in will and purpose. Yet if it gets to that point, the struggle for our survival and freedom can only be won through great suffering and sacrifice. The longer our people delay, the harder the fight. On the Statue of Liberty, which is, by the way, a gift from France which had nothing to do with immigration, there's a poem by Emma Lazarus that's become the anthem of immigration, and it goes this way: "Give me your tired, your huddled masses, yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore." How prophetic it is. We are certainly getting the wretched refuse. A few years ago, some friends wrote an alternative verse to Emma's, and it goes something like this. Give me your tired, your venereal diseased masses, yearning to infect more, the bum, the scab, the whore, the frizzy-haired Hottentot seeking a free ride, anything that can make it to the U.S. shore. Anything, that is, except an intelligent, hard-working white man. They say there's always a little humor and great tragedy. But seriously, everything truly important to us is at stake here. The well-being of our families, the freedom we so love, the prosperity we've worked so hard for, the beauty and civilization we cherish. Even the most basic human right of all, the right for us to go on and to pass on from one generation to the next, the inheritance of our culture, and the inheritance that makes everything else possible, the survival of our genotype. Basically, we are engaged in a titanic struggle for the life of our people and the character that has enabled us to achieve so much. Join with me in the struggle for the America that our forefathers envisioned, an America in which our children and theirs can live.
To help support Representative Duke's work, this radio broadcast, and this internet page, please mail your donations to The Duke Report, Box 88, Covington, Louisiana, 70434. Your support enables our movement to continue to reach our people with the vital truth. Also, be sure to subscribe to The Duke Report, a monthly journal of thought and opinion on critical issues facing our heritage. To subscribe, send $35 to The Duke Report, Box 88, Covington, Louisiana, 70434.